Robertson, welcoming you to this week's edition of TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that will welcome back James Sutorius in our second hour. James Sutorius, an actor most of you know from his appearances on television, particularly his appearances on such popular shows as Matlock, Columbo, Kojak, Murder, She Wrote, the acclaimed CBS miniseries Space, The Bob Crane Show, and his own series, The Andros Targets. Plus, some of you will recognize James as the longtime voice of Ragu spaghetti sauce. He's the guy who said, "That's Italian." James Sutorius, also one of the most accomplished stage actors of our time. As a matter of fact, James is working on a one-man show called My Life with Will, which is a breezy, nostalgic stroll down memory lane in which James shares stories from his 50-year career in movies, stage, and television, and why he always returns to the works of William Shakespeare for sustenance. We'll talk to James about that and a whole lot more when James Sutorius joins us in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, and speaking of Wills, we'll open up our first hour by welcoming longtime entertainment reporter and television producer William Keck. Will began his career in journalism in 1994 with the National Enquirer, where, on the one hand, he helped change the public perception of the Enquirer from tabloid rag to the most reliable source of reporting on the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and subsequent trial of O.J. Simpson, which Will did through his incredible and often exclusive access to the Brown family in the days immediately following Nicole's murder. On the other hand, Will, by his own admission, was also responsible for some of the outrageous and in some cases flat-out fabricated stories or quotes that made the National Enquirer so infamous, ticking off many A-list celebrities and their publicists along the way. Over the course of the next 30 years, however, Will Keck made the transition from tabloid reporter to quote-unquote legitimate celebrity reporter for such publications as USA Today, the Los Angeles Times, People, Entertainment Weekly, and TV Guide. Just like that, the same PR people who used to hang up on Will, in some cases threatened to kill him, suddenly granted him one-on-one access to their celebrity clients in their dressing rooms on the closed sets of major film and TV projects, backstage at concerts, and sometimes even in their own homes. The transformation is just part of the story of a brand new book that we'll tell you all about in just a second. William Keck, welcome to TV Confidential.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm happy to speak with you today.
I read a lot of memoirs. When I don't do this program, one of the things I do is I've had an opportunity to ghostwrite or ghost edit other memoirs, and so I'm very familiar with the form. And I like to ask this question because it interests me personally, and I think it interests the readers as well. Was there any one thing that, I mean, you made this transformation a long time ago, you know, your past is behind you. Was there any one reason why you felt now is the time to release this book?
Yeah, well, I guess a big part of that was the pandemic. I had the time to sit in my garage and go through stacks and stacks of reporter notebooks that I kept for the past 30 years, all the photographs that I kept of me with the various celebrities I interviewed, all of the recorded interviews that I had time to listen to, and then decide what should be saved and documented and what could be thrown away. And then what really emerged, I thought, as the most interesting were the times when I, for one reason or another, alienated these stars. And that became the shape of the book initially.
And to dovetail on that, this is not a typical memoir where you recount your highs and lows and everything that got you over the mountain to be the person you are. You talk about that transformation throughout the book, however, but this is a collection of, for lack of a better word, low points in your journalistic career, stories that you're not particularly proud to have shared and the lengths you did to obtain these stories and the lessons you learned along the way as a result of these stories, which goes back to what you may have done at the time you probably wouldn't do today, and here's why.
Well, sure. Well, the subtitle of the book is Cringeworthy Confessions of a Tabloid Bad Boy, and they are cringeworthy. I'm cleansing my soul. Some people have called it my mea culpa, and I felt it was time to expose my own secrets after exposing so many celebrity secrets over the years. So I'm not only talking about how I got these stories, hiding in trees and stealing garbage and sneaking into hospital rooms and setting up the installation of celebrities' tombstones. I'm also talking about my own secrets that I kept personally. And I found that when it came time to change my life professionally, I also had to take accountability for my own life. So I came out of the closet. I just wanted a clean slate all around. I was just time to stop telling lies to myself and to stop telling lies to my readers.
William Keck is on the line with us. William Keck, longtime entertainment reporter for such publications as the National Enquirer, People, Entertainment Weekly, USA Today, and the author of When You Step Upon a Star, Cringeworthy Confessions of a Tabloid Bad Boy, a collection of some of Will's most memorable celebrity encounters that for one reason or another went horribly wrong. When You Step Upon a Star, available wherever books are sold through our friends at Jacobs Brown Media Group. Now, we talked a little bit about this off mic. I want to talk some more about this on mic. Now, first of all, I want to make clear that in a lot of ways, your tenure at the Enquirer and your subsequent work with the LA Times and TV Guide and whatnot, it got you access to not only A-listers, but in many cases, A-listers who are the people that you enjoyed as a young boy, like all of us did, you know, as a child of television. And so your love of these people and the impact they had on your life growing up and the hours of entertainment that they brought you and your family. I mean, that was often foremost in your heart and foremost in your intent, no matter what outlandish stunt your editors asked you to do in order to gain access to these people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was a lonely kid. I was an only child. My father died when I was 5. And I latched on to these TV families as my own families. So when I came out to LA, I was much more excited to meet a Brady Bunch cast member than I was to meet George Clooney or Matt Damon. And that's the case to this day. I have this love of nostalgic television, and when I was working for the Enquirer, I did get to meet a lot of these legends before they died, many people who aren't with us anymore, and then 30 years later, when I was working as a TV producer for the Hallmark Channel, a morning show called Home and Family, I was able to actually produce reunions where I got these TV families back together. So I did a Love Boat Christmas special and a Knott's Landing Christmas special, reunions with the Waltons, and the Little House in the Prairie cast, and that was really a dream come true.
This is a tease. Do not want you to go into it into detail because I want people to pick up a copy of the book.
Okay.
Just to give you an example of the breadth of baby boomer celebrities that Will encountered, there's a wonderful story about how you set the record straight about a member of Adam West's family. Not only Adam West called you personally to let you know how much he appreciated the extra mile you went on there. That's in the book. On the other hand, Will Keck is probably the only person I can think of, and I will probably ever know, who managed to tick off both Andy Griffith and Dick Van Dyke.
Yes. Well, I never actually found out that Andy was upset with me, but Dick was upset with me on his own behalf and on behalf of Andy. And Dick Van Dyke, he's still with us. He's very fond of writing letters to the editors. So he called me out a couple times. He wrote Army Archer at Variety when I wrote a piece for the Los Angeles Times that mentioned that some TV reviewers were comparing his show Diagnosis Murder to a pruned-down version of NYPD Blue. So Dick Dick took me to task and said that he personally doesn't use prune juice, but if he did, he would have good use for the paper that my columns appeared in. I gotta love that. I give it to Dick.
Absolutely.
Very clever. And the other time I was, again, writing for the Los Angeles Times, I was doing a piece on a show called Family Law, and Andy Griffith was the guest star, and I ran into him on set. And I guess from my Inquirer years, I had a tendency to over-describe details. And in my description of Andy, I described everything down to his little spotted hands. And now I'm looking down at my own spotted hands, but at the time I was in my 20s, I didn't have spots. And Dick Van Dyke read this. And he said that Andy probably hadn't read my story, but if he did, he would probably take his little spotted hand and put it in my face. So again, you got to love a guy who's sticking up for his friend. And in both cases, Andy was right. I was a 20-something punk who was really committing ageism. I see it now from the perspective of somebody who has a few decades behind them.
William Keck is on the line with us. William Keck, longtime entertainment reporter and the author of When You Step Upon a Star, Cringeworthy Confessions of a Tabloid Bad Boy, collection of some of Will's most memorable celebrity encounters that for one reason or another went horribly wrong. When You Step Upon a Star, available wherever books are sold through Jacob Brown Media Group. I will share a story with you. I may have told this on the air once before. Years ago, I had a chance to talk to Robert Stack. Now, Stack, I was told, was one of the nicest people to talk to, one of the easiest people you could possibly talk to. I decided, because I was in my 20s and I was trying to, I'm trying to prove myself, and my first mistake was thinking that everybody under the sun has asked him about the Untouchables. I'm going to ask him about a couple of things that he was lesser known for as one of my lead-off to show that, you know, I'd done some homework on him. Well,
great idea.
It was a great idea. It backfired because one thing I did not uncover until the time of the phone interview was I picked the movie that he ended up suing the producer. So the mere mention of the movie was a sore spot right away. And I managed to tick him off with each of my next three questions. It got progressively worse. And the two things I learned from that is, A, every celebrity has a set of stories because that's their comfort zone. So my job, and I think your job as well, is, okay, get them to tell their stories, but try to come up with a couple of questions that makes them pause. And,
yes. That's
wrong,
them.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but the important thing is, and this is the other takeaway I learned, and I think you would agree on this as well, Will, is you need to listen, and you need to be able to read the room or read the phone. If it's not going well, you either pivot or don't be surprised if they hang up on you. Now, Stack didn't hang up on me. I mean, there's a happy ending to this story. He did say, look, I read up on you. I know this is not your first rodeo. And you, at that point, I'd had a couple books published. But let me give you some advice. It's okay to ask different types of questions, but try to tie them in to me somehow. Not that I'm all that important, but if you can tie them into me or the person to talk you're talking to, you're going to get a much better interview as a result. I never forgot that. He could have just said, you know, forget you, pal, and hung up. But, you know, in that moment, he recognized that. And like I said, I've learned to lead with that in the 30 years since.
Well, and in your defense, we can do as much research as possible, and we can still miss something. I'm sure that you didn't know that was a movie that he had a bad experience with. You were a fan of the movie, or you wouldn't have asked about it. And that brings to mind a story in my book.
Mm-hmm.
I, over the years, have angered Kelsey Grammer time again. And the most, I mean, I'm in his book. Kelsey writes about me in his own memoir,
yeah,
where he calls me, and you can get the book razor voice saying, William Keck, a despicable piece of flesh for the National Enquirer. Your mother must be very, very proud. I invite this young man to fry in hell. So that's what Kelsey says about me. So just a couple of years ago, I was working as a producer at the Discovery Channel, and I was working on a talk show. This was during Discovery Channel Shark Week, very, very popular. And so every guest who comes on Discovery during that week has to be asked about sharks if they have any encounters. So the host of the show that I was working on, a man named Josh Gates, was set to interview Kelsey, and I tried to get a pre-interview with Kelsey. It didn't happen. So I asked his rep, I said, does Kelsey have any shark stories? And his rep said, you know, Josh can just ask him during the interview. I have no idea. So I prepped a bunch of questions for Josh. I warned him to steer clear of water sports-type things because Kelsey had had a heart attack while he was paddleboarding in Hawaii. And I know there have been some incident, you know, with his brothers. Well, I thought it was just some kind of a situation with a paddleboarding accident they had had as well, or a scuba accident. Well, when Josh is interviewing Kelsey during the segment, he says, so, Kelsey, any fun shark stories to share? And Kelsey gets very serious and says, well, I don't have any fun shark stories, but my brothers were eaten by one. And sure enough, I had missed that two of his half-brothers have been out in the ocean, and there had been an incident, and their bodies were not found, and they were believed to have been eaten by sharks. So Josh was rightly furious with me. He came out into the bullpen where all the producers were, and he said, Will, this has got to be the biggest, I'll say, mess-up. He said something else
career. Yes.
Oh, listen, I felt terrible. I mean, I had researched through countless websites, interviews he'd done, but I had missed that little fact that his brothers were presumed to have been eaten by a shark. So shame on me. It happened. But I one of many apologies that I owe Mr. Grammer.
Well, you do use fry in hell as a pull quote on the back cover of your book.
Yes. So. That's right. And also Bruce Willis's quote that he was going to burn my house down.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's the quote from Dick Van Dyke, one of those quotes. And then I even have Mr. Spock, Leonard Nimoy, saying, you know, if you pull this ear, I'll say crap. He said another word, that I'm out of here. Leonard Nimoy did not appreciate my suggestion that he show Zach Quinto, who had just won the role of the movie Spock, how to wear the Spock ears. And he almost canceled the interview that I had set up. So, yeah, I just, I've over the years had a tendency to put my foot in my mouth when I'm around my favorite classic TV stars.
But on the other hand, you've got a wonderful pull quote from the Fonz, Henry Winkler. You've got a wonderful pull quote from Melissa Gilbert. So, and you have... One of the cool things about Will's book, and maybe we can get him to share a couple of more stories in our remaining time together, is that in many cases, there's one story with Marcia Cross from Desperate Housewives, where it is one of those moments that if you could do it again, you would not have. William Keck is on the line with us. William Keck, longtime entertainment reporter and the author of When You Step Upon a Star, Cringeworthy Confessions of a Tabloid Bad Boy, collection of some of Will's most memorable celebrity encounters that for one reason or another went horribly wrong. When You Step Upon a Star, available wherever books are sold through Jacob Brown Media Group. Will's going to stay with us for another segment. We hope you'll stay with us as we continue our conversation here in TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411. or visit FrontPorchRealtyGroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to TectonicLaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. TectonicLaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries. Deb Robertson welcoming you back to TV Confidential Radio Talk Show about television, and is happy to welcome back our friend James Sartorius. James Sartorius, one of the most accomplished stage actors of our time, having starred on Broadway many times throughout his career, as well as just about every major theater group and repertory company across the country, and an actor who has appeared frequently on television over the past, film and television over the past five decades, including such classic shows as Matlock, Kojak, Columbo, Murder, She Wrote, Family Ties, The X-Files, L.A. Law, and the acclaimed CBS miniseries Space. You might say, however, that James Sartorius is a Shakespearean actor at heart. He is one of the few actors to have played Hamlet three times on stage, while his interest in the Bard, if I remember correctly, was initially sparked after seeing Richard Burton play Hamlet in New York when James was either a teenager or in his early 20s or otherwise in his formative years. We'll ask him about that. It's one of the many things that James reveals in a marvelous one-man show that we'll tell you more about in just a second. James Sartorius, welcome back to our program.
Wow, I think the interview should be over by now. I mean, this is so many things I didn't realize I had done. This is great. Okay, goodbye. See you around. That's great. I didn't. I think that was pretty good to go. Yeah, that was very impressive.
Well,
very impressive of me, I guess, that I did all that.
Well, I get kidded sometimes about my introductions, but what I try to do with the intro is I try to set the stage for our conversation to cover, because there are a lot of things, there are a lot of interesting things you've done throughout your career, and I want to just, I want to.
That's true. No, it does cover the whole spectrum, I guess, except musicals and dancing and stuff like that. I never did, and a good reason too, why I didn't do musicals, it does. When I hear that, I go, boy, that did cover a lot of ground.
Well,
but again.
You've done a few things, as a friend of mine likes to say. But look, it's being on stage, particularly being on stage in a one man production, one man show. I mean, that's challenging enough as it is, because it's you and the audience, and it's not like any other stage production where you have other actors that you can play off of and can pass the baton off of. It's you and you alone for 90 minutes.
Yeah, and I've never done that before, and so it was a real challenge, and it does take a bit of courage to get up there for an hour and 20 minutes, and because obviously if you dry up, if you forget, I mean, you're up there alone, and then, so there you go. But, it's my one-man show, and it's about me. It's about my life and Shakespeare. So if I go up and dry and forget, I can say, okay, I have no idea where I am right now, so I guess I'll go over and look at the script. And so, and people would say, that's fine. Who cares? It's your show.
That's right. And being someone who has been on stage performing live and without a net, so to speak, for the better part of five decades, I mean, on the off chance you do go up on a line because you're still learning it and you're still workshopping it around, you have enough in your arsenal that you're able to steer yourself back into that moment where you have to be on the stage.
I mean, the one that you saw, I was looking at the film today. We filmed the one that you saw, and I was looking at it today, and I was looking at it for a few days. I'm going to go in tomorrow and do some editing, because there are a lot of people who didn't see it. I mean, it was wonderful, two performances, and it was packed, an 80-seat house, and we had, I mean, it was amazing, Ed, when you're doing a show, and you know everybody in the audience. I mean, that's very rare. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually you have 10 people there in the theater when you have 300 people, but to have everybody, I knew everybody. It just makes a little more pressure, stress on that, but that was great. I mean, it was, and looking at the film, going back to that, looking at it, there are two or three lines that I didn't say, which when I do it again, if I do, but I did dry up once during it, the one you saw, and I stopped and said, I don't know, where am I right now? And then it comes, you know, you just do it, and you don't panic, and it comes back to you, and an audience, they love that stuff, actually, you know, and so it's as long as you keep your head and your wits about you, it's fine, but it is a little stressful to be up there by yourself for that long, and again, I'm not 30 years old or 40, so it's, you know, it's more difficult, I mean,
to be
honest.
But here's the thing, and this is speaking of honest. Years ago, I saw George Carlin perform at in San Francisco. It was at the Davies Center in San Francisco, and he was workshopping a new routine. And at some point, I don't know, about 30 minutes into the show, he walks over to a side table, which it wasn't clear to us until the moment when he started pulling some pages out and refreshing his memory. He broke character and said, okay, I'm trying something out, and it's not totally committed to memory. So if it doesn't work, you're going to tell me why it doesn't work, you know. So, in that moment, you know, even though it was a little surprising to see.
It is.
And in much the same way when you're trying something out for the first time, or maybe for the first time in front of an audience, it's still new to you, and you're figuring out what parts of the show works, and and that's the beauty of live theater.
Yeah, and as I looked at it today, I was going over the whole thing again today to see where I'm going to get together with the editor tomorrow, and to get on to the fact that we filmed it, it's difficult. I mean, some actresses can't do it at all. They cannot watch themselves. Mm-hmm. They can't. And it is difficult. It takes me a few times through it just to relax and realize, James, it's okay. People really love this. And then you begin to see, but you see so many flaws, you know, just physically, things you don't like physically. And then just the way, but that's part of, which is great, the journey that to do it again. And then hopefully I will. Which we can talk about, that I do see, obviously, things that I would like to do differently. And, you know, calm down here. You know, you got to move it along here. And, you know, why are you getting so excited? And, I don't know. It's really interesting, but it's hard. It's hard, Ed, to watch yourself. It's the more you look at it, the more you relax and go, yeah, you know, James, you've had this career for a reason.
Yes, and to borrow a baseball metaphor, because I know you played ball once upon a time, you have to think of each performance as you would each game in a major league in a baseball season. You can't get too caught up in the high of one game or the low of another game, because everything kind of flows, and it's what you do once you, you know, as Dusty Baker used to say, water finds its own level, and it's a matter of finding, you know, working through to find the equilibrium what you're working on.
Yeah, and the thing about that too is that my whole life has been doing plays where you have a week, you do it 8 times a week or 6 times a week, and you do it for a month, or Broadway, you're doing it for months, but here, the way this worked, I did it once a week on a Thursday, and then the next Thursday. And that's what's hard. There is no rhythm. But if you do it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then you do get into what Dusty Baker's talking about. Mm-hmm. But you do get into a rhythm, and okay, you can put it behind you. But when you do it just once, and
the R word, it's your life, and you tell your life with authenticity because you lived it, and that adds to the.
If you're doing Truman, or if you're doing Robert Morris, it is true.
Uh-huh.
Or even I guess Hal Holbrook doing Mark Twain. If you're doing somebody else, if you go up, it's a little more difficult because you're not you, you're somebody else.
Yes.
So it's to break that. You know, when up there playing me, I can do whatever I want because I'm playing me.
Yes.
I'm being me. But those guys are playing, somebody else. And so it's just a little different. I think it's, going up then, but I think would be, then you really be a little more difficult.
Yes. We're talking to James Satorius. James Satorius, award-winning stage actor, one of the few actors to have played Hamlet 3 times, and an actor who has worked with such movie and TV legends as Al Pacino, Sam Waterston, Joe Clayburgh, Bob Crane, Peter Falk, Judd Hirsch, Danny Kaye, and James Garner, among many, many others. James's recent projects, the one we've been talking about today, is called My Life with Will. It is a one-man show in which James recounts his lifelong love affair with the works of Shakespeare while also sharing some memories about his movie and TV career. Now, I recently saw one of the two performances that James gave of My Life with Will at the White Fire Theater here in Sherman Oaks. He has performed it in other venues, and you said that one of the White Fire Theater performances were taped. Will that be released to the public in some way soon?
Yeah, I don't. To my friends. To all the people, I don't think it's going to go on Netflix or do it. I mean, come on, there's a reality to this. But, so many of my friends who don't live here in Sherman Oaks in L.A. Really want to see it, and they didn't see it. I did it. This wasn't the first time. I did it down in San Diego. I work at the North Coast Rep in Del Mar and the Old Globe in La Jolla. But I did this at North Coast Rep in Del Mar, Solana Beach. And last year I did 2 performances. So this was the second time that I've done it. And when I get through editing it and looking at it and relaxing, Ed, truthfully, I don't have to let anybody ever see it.
That's
It's mine. And
it is.
But I should, and I'm sure I will. But no, it's not gonna. You can see it again. It's just gonna be a link. I'll have a link, and if somebody wants to see it, then I'll send them a link on their computer.
Okay. All right. If it's something that you want to release or plan to release in any way, or even if it's in a limited way, and you want our listeners to know about it, by all means, let us know, and we'll help you spread the word. Okay.
Okay. No. Great. No, great. You never know. You never know. And sure. No, thanks. We'll see how that goes.
Then we'll see.
As Hamlet says, in my mind's eye, and I said in the play, in my mind's eye, Horatio. And in my mind, it's interesting. In your mind's eye, you do that performance that you saw, which I really thought was magical. I love that performance. And then you see that performance on film, and it's just human nature. You go, oh, geez, I thought that was really good, and then it's very human to be very self-critical of. But the response, Ed, it was amazing response, as you saw that night. It was just, and what I heard from people afterwards, and it's all very gratifying. And you work so hard at this, so hard, and then you get something like that, and it's such a huge feeling of satisfaction.
Yeah, and when the audience responds to it, as they do at the White Fire, as they did in San Diego, that gives you an idea. Okay, there may be a greater audience for this one way or another. So.
Well, let me say, you mentioned that I was at the White Fire the other night, and Brian, who runs the White Fire, I was there seeing a play. He wanted me to see a play he directed, and I came out afterwards. And there's Brian, and I knew that he had really liked the show. And I said, hey, Brian, hi. Congratulations tonight. He said, James, I got to tell you, James. I said, no, I love your show. And I want to do a run of it. I want to do a run of it here. And I'm going, what? Brian, no, James, I want to, let's do it here. Let's do it here for 6 weeks, once a week for 6 weeks. And I was stunned. I was so taken back. It was a total surprise. And I'm going, well, okay, I guess I don't. is Thursday. Because I said to him Saturday, well, call me. Let's, you know, we have to talk about it. Because now it's, he's going to be producing it, you know. And so I haven't heard yet. That's Thursday. I'm sure I will. I don't think he would say that and then not follow through.
Yes.
But he, as of now, he wants to, I mean, we have to talk about it. But,
yes.
But the idea of doing it again and working on some things that I could see in the film that I want to change is exciting to me. I'm just worried about, you know, getting an audience. But he wants to make money, you know, and so I assume he thinks he can bring people in.
Well, if he thinks it's worth booking for a six-week run, that's half the battle. That tells you he believes it is an evening
audience.
That he want that more people should see. So that's all a good thing. Are you on social media? Are you on Facebook or?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
So I don't go on.
All right, but okay, so whether you do or whether Team James does it for you, that's one way we could play, people could find progress about it.
Oh yeah. You mean in terms of I do it again?
Yeah, I mean people can follow you on Facebook and you'll post.
Yeah.
You know, what?
I do. No, I certainly put my agent and I certainly posted it on Facebook a lot. You know, James doing this thing and I would too. I mean, the theater has to. I mean, the PR from the theater itself is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
But I would do my own. I do my own PR too. And there are many people, I think here, who didn't see it, who I know that, you know. So there's an audience still probably that I would have. And you know, and another thing I'll just say about doing it some other place. The man who wrote it, my dear friend Dennis Brown,
mm-hmm.
a college roommate and dear friend forever, who wrote it. And then I did my own sort of stuff to it. But he said, James, we went to the same college, Illinois Wesleyan, as you know I say in the play.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to do it at Wesleyan. You've got to go back and do it for the drama department and the school. And so right now he wants me to do it this October at their homecoming, all the festivities of homecoming
mm-hmm.
at a college.
Yeah.
He said it would be so, because the drama department always does something. And it's an hour and 20 minutes. And so we've already sent the packet to them all about it and all the info and we're waiting to hear to see if, because that's where it all started. I mean, that's where I did the first Hamlet
mm-hmm.
on that stage. It'd be full circle. I'd be doing this one-man show about, you know, and this is where the journey all started. I think it's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea, too. We'll keep good thoughts about that. You can follow James Sartorius on Facebook. We're talking to James about My Life with Will, An Evening with Will Shakespeare and James Sartorius, his new one-man show, which he recently performed at the Whitefire Theater in Sherman Oaks. Now, you anticipated one of my questions, James, in that it's a one-man show. It's your life, but it's written by your friend Dennis Brown. How did that collaboration come to be? Did he say, James, you need to do this?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It was during COVID, and Dennis had written some other one-man shows for Barry Bostwick and Stacey Keach, and some of them went and they didn't go. And I was always saying, joking, you know, where's my one-man show? I mean, Dennis, he's a great writer, and he's written some books and, you know, and actor books and playwrights and teacher. And I mean, he's just got a great theater background in every way. And it was COVID. And so during COVID, then he said to me, James, I'm going to write you, you know, all kidding aside, I'm going to write you a one-man show. And I said, you are? I said, yeah, I am. This is COVID. There's nothing else I can do. There's nothing, everything stopped. So during COVID, he put...
James Sartorius is on the line with us. James's recent projects include My Life with Will, An Evening with Will Shakespeare, and James Sartorius, which we'll talk some more about when we come back. Plus, we'll also ask James about some of his other roles in film and on stage, including co-starring with Judd Hirsch on Broadway in Conversations with My Father. All that and more. We continue our conversation with James Sartorius here on TV Confidential.
Now you can get generic Viagra shipped to your door for about $2 a pill. Get the same impact for less. Call Steel Man Pills now and get the same blue pill for about $2 a pill. Call now for the 50-pill special and save even more. Plus, get a free bonus.
800-932-2613. 800-932-2613. That's 800-932-2613.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.
Well, hi, this is Lindsay Bloom, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
James Satoris is on the line with us. James's recent projects include My Life with Will, An Evening with Will Shakespeare, and James Satoris, a breezy, nostalgic stroll down memory lane where James shares stories from his 50-year career in stage, movies, and television, and why he always returns to the works of William Shakespeare for sustenance. James is talking to us about the play and sharing a few memories of his career. He joins us today. You can follow James Satoris on Facebook. You are someone who looks forward. You know, you're always looking for the next challenge. You're always looking for the next part. But for a project like My Life with Will, obviously you had to look back at your life. I mean,
yeah,
was that difficult to do?
No. Nobody asked me that question before. Looking back, no, it was exciting. It was warming my heart. It was like, oh yeah, that was a wonderful time in the laundry room. What were you doing in the laundry room? And you're really making a lot of noise in Franklin Hall. I mean, I'm in there doing give me the gift of a grip top sock and all this stuff. And I guess I didn't care. I mean, certainly people heard me, but maybe they got to go, oh, he's an actor, he's in there. But then they would walk in and want to, you know, wash their clothes, as you saw in the show.
Yes.
Like, oh, sorry, I'm just in here doing my Shakespeare. No, it was very warming. I'm trying to think of other parts of the show and reliving going abroad. In 1964, we went to New York for the first time. All those plays that we saw, all those things, and as you know, having seen the show, there's some truthful, you know, tough moments in it that I had with some, you know, I had to work on stuff, you know, speech problems and stuff like that.
Well, that's another thing I liked about watching the play, because it's inspiring. If you have a speech impediment, you can overcome it, you know. And
yeah, which I did. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it was a stutter. I mean, it was a stutter. So people know what we're talking about. I mean, James Earl Jones. I mean, the president. I mean, Joe Biden. You really can tell. I mean, I'd really overcome it, and you wouldn't know with me as I. But you really can tell with Joe Biden that, as you can with James Earl Jones.
Mm-hmm.
When they have, I mean, it's really remained with Joe Biden, and you can, being a stutterer, I can tell when he's fighting, you know, for it. But I think he had it much worse than I had it. But I certainly had a stutter and a stammer, and you know, and as I say in the play, it never goes away. I just have learned to, you know, I've controlled it.
Yes, and
what you would never.
And having the opportunity to lose yourself in the words of Shakespeare and the words of all the many great writers that you've had a chance to perform. That is therapeutic. That is helpful in and of itself.
Yeah, you think, well, what are you doing, James, going into being an actor? But so many people, you hear that, you know, just, you think it would be the last place you would want to be is, you know, if you're going to be stuttering and stammering, is to be on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something will, I don't know. It's still, as I said, it doesn't go
One of the fun moments of the show, and it was a pivotal moment for you as a 20-year-old man at the time, was the opportunity to see Richard Burton perform live on stage, which you did in New York. For those, you know, give our listeners an idea of, I mean, how impactful was that for you?
Elizabeth, a little more than kidding. my Burton was just so terrible. Well, it wasn't, I mean, Burton wasn't, I don't know, I mean, so far long ago, Shakespeare started, it wasn't Richard Burton that started it. He became a part of it. Mm-hmm. It was when I was in high school, and in a one-man show, I talk about Ed Hollins, you know, I was, this is for the speech impediment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into him, and he handed me the piece of paper, as I say, and he said, read this. And it was to be or not to be. And it was, as I said, that's when Shakespeare came into my life. And I didn't know Shakespeare, but this was to get over, you know, the speech thing and breathing. It changes my breathing. My voice changed completely when it was more diaphragmatic and supported. And so Shakespeare, in my senior year in high school, I guess it just, you know, it's hard to remember all that, but it just became, I just loved it. I mean, I loved, and I did a lot of, oh, that this too solid flesh would melt. I remember doing that one a lot at home. And then it's when I went to college and met Dennis, you know, who wrote the piece,
mm-hmm.
that I became aware of Richard Burton in that time, in the early 60s, 63, when I went to college there. And then in 64, because I had this love for Shakespeare, and then Burton became a part of it. I don't know exactly where it started with Burton, where, you know, the exact moment. But he became something that, oh, Richard Burton, I was listening to recordings of him and, oh, Peter O'Toole. And then we got the tickets to go, Dennis got tickets to go to Broadway, to mm-hmm. New York in 64 to see 8 or 9 shows in 6 days. And the first show that we saw was so exciting, was to see Burton in Hamlet. And then I continued with my love of, it's funny because Burton, looking back and all, and watching his Hamlet again months ago, I watched the whole thing. You can watch his whole Hamlet, and it's just so not the way I would do it at all. I mean, he's so. I mean, if Burton gets up there, we're just so different, actually, as actors. I mean, he's very. I don't know how to say it, but he's technically, you know, incredible, and he's mm-hmm. doing. It's not like he's almost showing off how he can do this amazing with speed and all. I don't know. It's just very different from what I ended up. As I said in the show, after a few years, I no longer was trying to be Richard Burton. I was, as I said, I was having enough trouble being Sartorius.
Yes.
That was the hard part.
Yes, but and look, that's the journey all of us go through.
Yeah.
You know, whatever we choose to do or whatever we realize we're going to do in life, it's like we may start wanting to be someone else, and it takes a while before we realize, you know, I'm gonna be me.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right. I mean, the Burton thing was very important, but then it was very important. And
yeah.
I think it was vocally, verbally. I mean, not verbally too, and all. And our love for Dylan Thomas. We both, and I still do. I mean, but we both had this love for Dylan Thomas, A Child's Christmas in Wales, mm-hmm. and his poems, and so I'd be doing them in college, and I would hear him doing them, and I loved it, and his voice, of course. So I was working on my voice. I wanted to change my voice and the breathing. So those are the things about Burton, you know. And then seeing him, you know, and I remember I wasn't just blown away by his Hamlet. Again, it's so long ago, but in the moment I was sitting in row O, and yet, my God, but there's, I'm watching Burton arrive, just to watch the limo pull up, you know, and the crowds out there. Then, back in 64, the crowds and the mounted horses and the barriers and thousands of fans, and it was just amazing, because Elizabeth Taylor was with him, you know. I mean, and the night I saw him, she got out of the car. The limo pulled up, as I said in the show, the door opened, and there was Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
I'm going, what? Sammy Davis Jr.? And then there was Elizabeth, and then he got out, you know, and there was Burton, and it just, I mean, as a young actor, it was just, oh my God, this is so incredible. This is what I want to do. This is, oh my God, this is so wonderful. And then you go in and you watch him, and this, I mean, it was just fine. I mean,
We're talking to James Satorius. James's recent projects include his one-man show, My Life with Will, An Evening with Will Shakespeare and James Satorius, which he recently performed at the White Fire Theater here in Sherman Oaks, and if all goes well, he will be performing at other venues later in the year. You can follow James on Facebook. Going back to that, you know, your first trip, you and Dennis, your first trip to Broadway in 64, besides seeing Burton as Hamlet, I mean, this is like a who's who of stars, both stage stars and film stars, that you saw all in the same week.
It was amazing. It was Redford and, you know, and Jason Robards and Alec Guinness and then Carol Channing, you know, doing the musical, and Tammy Grimes was doing it. It was just George Rose was doing, I mean, it was amazing back then. It's all different now, but yeah, it was in that short period of time to see those plays and those actors. Wow.
Were there any backstage passes as part of your first trip?
No, we were just freshmen. No, we were freshmen in college.
My Life with Will, An Evening with Will Shakespeare, and James Satorius, the one-man show that James stars in. If all goes well, it will be mounted, as they say in the industry, and it will be performed in a few other venues in the weeks and months ahead. You can follow James. For updates, you can follow James Satorius on Facebook. James will be back for part two of our conversation next week on TV Confidential. We'll ask him about some of his other famous roles in movies and on television, including working with James Garner on the epic miniseries Space. That's coming up next week, part two of our conversation with James Satorius on TV Confidential. You can follow James Satorius on Facebook. Ed Robertson, Beth, Tony Figueroa, and Donna Allen, Phil Grice, Ray Garibar, and Susan Soper. Thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. For more information on how they can help you.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.